Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, February 7th, 2013. And tonight I'll be talking about some interesting science. People have been writing in, and I've been talking about the comet C2012 and the winds. People have experienced these winds, and they're horrendous winds. And then all of a sudden there's none. And then all of a sudden they're from the other direction, or a different direction. And so what I'm going to do is talk in detail about this and why this, how do you relate this to that comet that's out by the orbit of Jupiter. So I'll be doing that. That'll be somewhat the main science topic. And I've got a whole laundry list here of science issues, a little bit on the ashen light of Venus, an update on comet C2012-S1, and then comet Lemon C2012-F6, interaction with the planet Mercury that's coming up here. I want to announce that. Comet Lemon is glowing in a beautiful, beautiful, luminescent, bright green. And it's so comical to see the standard scientists out there talking about that this is reflection from the sunlight. Now, it is so absurd. If you want to talk to a chemist about this, here's an example. Okay, outer space, a comet is a very rarefied, extremely rarefied gas and dust around the comet. And for it to glow like a bright green, let's take an example that you can do. And now, back in the good old days of science, the Germans had a word, the German scientists had a word for what we call a thought experiment, a Gedanken experiment that was called. And it was a thought experiment to try and get a feeling for things. It was a way of putting things into perspective. So let's do a Gedanken experiment with a tube of glass. We're going to do this in the laboratory. And you can do this with any physics laboratory. You can do this in a chemistry laboratory. Or talk to a chemist. I was just a guest today on the Dr. Bill Deagle show, and we were discussing this. Dr. Bill is a chemist and knows about chemistry. So I was discussing comet, plasma comet issues, and as a chemist, bouncing these ideas off of him. But anyway, any chemist would be able to tell you the same thing. In our Gedanken experiment, let us take a tube of gas, or cyanide gas and carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide gases. So cyanide, carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide. These are common gases in a comet tail. And actually what's going on is the oxygen and the carbon in the cyanide, the atoms that build up these molecules form in the comet tail as they come in under electrical forces that provides the energy of formation so that these molecules can form. And they're not coming off the comet nucleus like some melting ice ball. But at any rate, now we're just looking at the tail of the comet, the rarefied gases out in the tail region. So you could take, in a laboratory, a clear glass tube with electrodes at the end, basically a neon tube, but clear glass. Okay, and in that glass, you put a rarefied gas. You could put neon, you could put argon, you could put other types of gases that are used. Neon is one that lights up, and it's one of our favorite ones for signs, etc. It's a kind of an inert gas. But out in outer space, the comet tail consists of cyanide, carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide. That's what they're saying. I believe that there are other elements there and there are the things going on. But, okay, we're going to do two things to this tube of gas. We're going to first shine a light through it. Okay, now it's a clear glass tube. There should be no interaction with the light with the glass tube. It should simply pass through the glass tube. And in our Gedanken experiment, we can actually create a perfect glass tube that does not reflect or cause any type of aberration, reflection, diffraction, or anything of the light. Okay, it's only going to interact with that gas, that rarefied gas that we have in the tube. Okay, now shine your light on that gas that's in the tube and measure the amount of reflected light that comes off of that gas. And any chemist, if you tell them to do this, they would look at you like, what are you talking about? There's not going to be any measurable reflected light coming off this gas. What are you talking about? Okay, now in our Gedanken experiment, we are going to take, there, remember we have electrodes, metal electrodes that are embedded in the glass at the end of the tube, and we're going to take and we're going to pass an electrical discharge through the tube. This is how we light up a neon sign. You take, it's a conducting path, and you can make it, you've seen neon signs in all shapes and forms, but in outer space, the plasma discharge of the comet passes directly, like a straight line through the comet in the direction to the sun, from the sun, and it's primarily electrons, the same mobile charge carriers that you have in a neon gas tube, a neon light tube. And so anyway, you're passing electrons through this comet tail, or in the case of the tube, you're passing the electrons through the gas in the tube and out the electrode at the other end. And to do this, you need a fairly high voltage transformer. So the neon, part of the neon sign setup is a high voltage transformer that transforms regular AC 120 volt wall current into a high voltage current that passes through your neon light. And that's kind of like they spark and zap a little bit. You know, they make that zzz noise. That's because there's high voltage involved. And in outer space, there are relatively high voltages involved across the length, the span of the comet. If you were to measure the voltage per meter on a comet tail, it would be extremely, extremely small. But over the length, if you talk about a million miles of comet discharge, then that all adds up. Okay, so anyway, now you pass the electrical current through your tube with cyanide or your other gases, whatever they are that fluoresce in the color green. And by the way, there should be a spectrum that's given off by this comet. The people at NASA, etc., that are announcing the green color as reflected light, this is the point of all of this, is that the standard Tier 2 garbage fairy tale science people are trying to pawn off that it's reflected light from the comet that causes it to glow green. And this is absurd. Scientists and standard science and Tier 2 scientists for a long time have denied the luminosity of comets. In other words, the ability of comets to shine brighter than just the reflected light of the sun. And that's exactly what's going on with this comet Lemon, C2012F6. It's lit up like a light bulb. It's a green fluorescent light bulb in the sky, and the ancients talk about this. The Hopi Indians talk about it. They talk about the blue comets being the dangerous ones. What are the blue comets? They're the ones that are really lit up, that intense blue light, typically of a very intense electrical discharge. Hale-Bopp was a very good example of a comet that gave off a lot more light than it received from the sun. Comet Hyakutake was one where X-rays were discovered in the nose side, 30,000 miles out to the sunward side. How does an ice ball, 30,000 miles to the sunward side, develop X-rays? It is so absurd. I've been to a lot of the AGU meetings where the scientists try to say that it's charge exchange. That's that kind of magical Swantz factor that, and these guys get paid to talk about this. It's so absurd. Why does a little ice ball have charge exchange going on 30,000 miles to the sunward side? Shouldn't Earth have that too? Why, sure it should. Shouldn't Venus have that? Venus is way bigger than that little comet that they're talking about. Venus should have it too, but it doesn't. What's so special about this ice ball that it can produce X-rays by charge exchange 30,000 miles out to the sunward side? It's so absurd. No, it's the plasma discharge coming in from the sun. The Bremsstrahlung X-rays that I predicted in my papers, 1979, I predicted there would be X-rays discovered to the sunward side of the comet nucleus. It's in my paper. You can read it in the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book. And you can read it in the appendix where my original three-part comet paper is published. You can read it there. So at any rate, back to the issue of Comet Lemon. It's lighting up like a light bulb. It's like a neon light bulb. So when you pass your current through the neon tube or the tube containing a gas, the gas that fluoresces in green, then you should be able to detect the a lot of light coming out of that tube. And okay, so once again, let's compare. You shine your equivalent sunlight through your glass tube and you ask the chemist, how much reflected light are you going to expect off the gas in that tube? And they're going to look at you like you're out of your mind. Like you're not going to see any reflected light off of that gas in that tube. What are you talking about? It's absurd. And equally absurd that standard science should make this claim regarding a comet. It's lighting up like a light bulb. There's an electrical current passing through that comet, through that rarefied gas around the comet, and it's lighting up like a light bulb. What's so difficult about that to understand? But understand something. The characteristics of reflected light, the characteristics of reflected light are very different from the characteristics of luminescence, where the electron beam comes in, excites the atoms or molecules, the molecules give off a characteristic light, and you can take a spectrometer and you can look at the lines. A reflected light is very different from luminescent light. And any chemist, any physicist with basic knowledge will tell you this. So with a spectrometer, you can look at Comet Lemon and pick out the lines, the spectroscopic lines of the chemistry in that comet tail, and it'll tell you that those are spectral lines, those are excited lines, and you can find the energy levels that are exchanged there with the electron exchanging between the energy levels, and so you can determine that. But why are these scientists doing this ridiculous, bad science out there, things that could not possibly make sense in a freshman chemistry or physics class, and they're publishing it on the internet? There are people that are constantly criticizing me out on the internet, but these are nameless people. They hover around chat pages. We call them trolls, internet trolls. They're paid government disinformation people. And their job is to sit there, and any time Jim McCanney's name appears, they have to say something like, here's a pseudoscientist, or throw something out there. But I'll tell you something. My fans are out there slamming these guys, and they don't come back because they know they're not fooling the public anymore. My fans are smart, and I want to give you about 10 claps here to my fans, because every week, more and more, I have people writing in, people that listen to the show, people that have been educated, pointing out things that they see. I don't have time to scour every newspaper, internet release by government disinformation agencies, but my fans are out there looking all over the internet all the time. So they send this stuff to me, and so I think I'll go through a little bit of it here just to give you an inkling of the kind of things that feedback to me But what that tells me is that my fans out there are listening, they're learning, and they're seeing through the, I talk about getting hip boots because you know what's getting pretty deep out here. You better get those kind that come all the way up to the chest. Because before this year is out, that the old you-know-what's going to get awfully, awfully deep and congested. So at any rate, let me do a quick few updates. I wanted to talk about Google. I started slamming Google, the search engine, a long time ago. But it's now very clear that Google, this came out this week. Remember Google Maps, that you can go down, you can see your house on Google Map. You can get a street view of your house. How do you think they got that data? They had trucks and cars with cameras. Now, I've seen these cameras, and these are high, high quality, high definition cameras, and they're mounted all over a car. I saw one drive down the street one day, and the guy just zipped down the street, and zoom, zoom, and they drove up and down all the streets in the whole country. Now, what does it take to do this? Wow, that's an investment of time and money, and to have all of the cars that are driving all over the United States constantly re-photographing is a huge, huge effort. But this came out today that in addition to the cameras, they had very high-tech Wi-Fi information. Receivers in those vehicles. And when they drove by the houses, anybody that had a Wi-Fi connection, they were recorded. And any information they could get from your Wi-Fi, this is the Wi-Fi in your house, Google got that information, put it in a database, and harbors that information. Who is Google? You know, and the guys who got rich off of making Twitter and Google and Facebook and all of these little hootsie-tootsie guys that made a boatload of dough out there off of these, they sold out to the government. The CIA owns Google. If you look up the ownership ladder, it goes right back to the old CIA, the World Banker Police Force. And so anyway, this past week, about a week ago, Google got hacked. Google got hacked. Well, gee, did Google really get hacked, or did they just let the information out there? Here's another one that, by the way, when they found out that Google was gathering all of this information off of the streets on your home network and your router and your Wi-Fi network, they were given a $25,000 fine by the Federal Communication Commission. Now, wait a minute. Google? $25,000? Fine? Wait a minute. A $25,000 for a company that just went skyrocketed in value? Federal Communications Commission. How do you come up with, they find little teeny mom and pop shops more than that. But at any rate, this past week also a quarter million accounts at Twitter got hacked. And when they get in there, they got all your networks, all your friends, all your data, all your personal information. And I've said this before that, you know, be careful of especially new phones. When you get a new phone, the first thing that company does is give you a new Google account that goes with your phone. Everything you do on that phone goes up and is recorded at Google. So when you want to go out and get that swell new phone, just remember that everything you do on there goes to Google and is stored. Record high... that Google stock this week. Okay, enough of that. Just a quick note. When you look at, say, CNN, I call it the Candy Nugget News, you see terror, killings, bombings, kidnapping, governments falling, world economic chaos, disease, stress, hatred. This is the banker world. this is the world created by the world bankers, because they know that stress, unemployment, you know, keeping the workforce, the people that are the sheeple out there, keeping them at a level in which they're just barely chasing that carrot, you know, the concept of the carrot. You drop a carrot out in front of the horse's nose, and he never gets the carrot, he just chases it. And that's what's going on. So those are the type of things that are running this world into the ground: resource depletion, water mismanagement. And so anyway, I thought this was interesting. Someone sent in this week this quote, and it's from a guy named Chris Hedges. And I want to read this. It's rather true and rather interesting, more than rather. Anyway, it says, this is from Chris Hedges. It says, "We now live in a nation where doctors destroy health, lawyers destroy justice, universities destroy knowledge, governments destroy freedom, the press destroys information, religion destroys morals, and our banks destroy the economy." Chris Hedges, that's a quote. This was sent in by a listener. And this just in, many, many, many third world countries now, the people are being told to go into their bank and get a new card. They need their new debit card. The debit cards are becoming more common amongst the average, poor, lower class people around the world. They have a bank account. You might call them the middle class in a third world country. But being told to go back in and get a chip in their card. And we can only imagine what's in that chip. But interesting that that's going on. I had the misfortune this week of seeing Hillary Clinton on TV, and she was before Congress talking about one of the CIA mess-ups in a foreign country. And boy, I hardly recognized old Hillary there. And I mean, old, she looks pretty battered and bad. Let's just say it that way. I'm not saying beaten up by Billy or something, but just she looks pretty bad. And the comment is that Bill and Hillary and the Clintons, the Bushes, the people that are visible, those are the people who have personal gains. They want to power, possession. What are these people doing? They got more money than you could ever spend in a lifetime. They should be off vacationing and having a good time, but they're out there trying to run the world. These are the people that do the bidding of the world bankers. The people up on that top pyramid of control, you never see their names, you never hear about them, they're completely in the background, but it's the Clintons, the Bushes, the other people in government that run their essential clogs, the scientists that are owned, the tier one scientists who sold their soul to the devil been plucked out of the tier two groups, been brought into tier one. They're under death threats. They cannot maneuver. They are basically owned. Their souls are owned, and they produce technologies that are extremely destructive to the world. And all of that information passes up the ladder to the world leadership, which is a very evil system. That's all I can tell you. I just want to quickly mention there's an old technique used in many foreign countries called nationalization. It's where the government comes in. It happened recently in Bolivia, where the government came in and took over the oil industry and threw out the international corporations, which were taking extreme profits, destroying the ecology, and the people in the country were not getting any benefits, so they nationalized. But nationalization, I think in the United States would be very good, but look who runs the government. The government will never nationalize the corporations that run the government. But there's just in the Netherlands this past week, I want to give an example where nationalization is not good. In the Netherlands this past week, they nationalized the SNS Real Central Bank, which is part of the World Banking System. But what they did is they took the debt from bad real estate investments in Spain. They took that debt and put it on the public. So the bank basically gets paid off for bad investments, and the public gets dumped with the bill. So nationalization of world banks is not a good issue. It's another technique of dumping that bad, worthless debt onto the public. And so the poor people of the Netherlands, just like, well, the United States is under financial collapse due to these techniques, these banking techniques that are thousands of years old that are being brought back. They were outlawed in the Old Testament that has been refined and homogenized for public consumption. The sun this week continues to be at extremely low levels of activity, almost zero level of activity this past week with the sun. And, of course, that can change at any time, but we're well along into this solar cycle, and I would venture to say that we really don't know where we are in this solar cycle. It was supposed to peak in 2012. If you look back historically at the solar peaks of the solar cycles, that they peaked at a certain time, and 2012 should have been the peak of this current solar cycle. Then they said 2013, and it's looking like possibly 2014. So it's impossible to say, but all I can say is that there's really nobody that's got a handle on what's going on here. We had almost 2 years without sunspots. Right now we have some weak sunspots, but I just want to recall what it was like back in the 90s, back in the old Hale-Bopp days, and also back at the early 2000s, where we were dealing with the maximum back then, the solar max around the year 2000. The sun was booming, boom, boom, on an hourly basis. Tremendous booming solar flares. We don't see any of that now. Not any at all. So that's why it's interesting that this comet is glowing green. There's quite a bit of solar activity there, discharging the solar capacitor locally. And by the way, Comet Lemon was first discovered. I went back and did an orbital analysis of Comet Lemon. Coming into the solar system, it was discovered on March 12, 2012, about a year ago. And it's right when it kind of dipped down and crossed over the ecliptic plane. That's the plane of the planets. And that's a plane in which the northern and the southern hemisphere solar winds unite and come flowing back. And so it's a point at which many comets ignite into brightness. And, of course, there's another example, just one more example of the electrical currents in the solar system, in the return current sheets, that cause cometary activity to be excited. And so that's when it was discovered. It kind of exploded into brightness, and it was discovered in an automated search by the Russians. By the way, this was very interesting. I'm going to jump over to Comet C2012S1. And this was just in by a listener from England, someone who's been a regular listener for quite a number of years. And so I'm going to actually read this from the email that was sent in, just to give you a clue of the level of sophistication of the listeners here. It says, "Hiya, Jim. 8 years listening to your show does rub off on you eventually. It says, always I know you're a busy man and don't want to waste your time, but here is a brief synopsis on a bit of the dig around the web. says, according to the IAU, that's the International Astronomical Union that catalogs comets, the comet naming procedure, it should name the surname of the finders and conventionally no more than two. Sometimes you can have three names if it was a team effort, and the third person can be listed as the name of a comet, kind of like Hail Bopp. Hail was the first guy to report it. Bopp, the Japanese guy, was the second guy to report it. Alan Hale is an amateur astronomer from, I think, New Mexico. But at any rate, they discovered Hail Bopp, so thus the name Hail Bopp. And so there's many comet names that have a name associated with them. Comet Lovejoy was discovered by a single Australian amateur astronomer, for example. But in the case of comet C2012S1, they call it ISON, and that's the name of the research center over in Russia that discovered it. But what is interesting is that the same network of telescope, automated telescope searching, when they discovered other comets, when they discovered other comets, specifically Comet Elenin and other comets recently, they put the name of the people who discovered it. And so the curiosity is why, with the comet C2012S1 ISON, why they didn't put the researchers' names on the comet who discovered it. Because they did with all of the other comets. Only this one, they don't have names on it, which is very interesting. And it tells me probably that they were watching this comet come in a long time before. And so they finally had to pop it because some amateur was going to discover it and get his name stuck on it. So they had to release it. And what an unusual date to release it, September 21st, 2012. So anyway, I'm going to read this listener's email just to, like I say, give you a clue of the sophistication of the analysis that my listeners can do out there. It says, according to the IAU comet naming procedure, it should be the surname of the finder and conventionally no more than two. But sometimes max of three if it was a team effort. So then it gives the comet name HTML website where at Harvard where these cataloging is done. It says the ISON network, this is the Russian telescope network that discovered the comet 2012 S1, it says the ISON network seems to be a legit body searching for space objects according to its 2008 web page. And so then it gives the web page the report of the talking about the observatory in Russia. The email goes on to say, although it really should be called ISOON, giving its full name International Scientific Optical Observational Network. There's two O's in there. Okay, here's the interesting part. So the two guys that found the comet, Vitaly Nevsky and Artyom Novochonok, should have been able to name it. They should have had their names. It should have been called Comet Nevsky Novochonok. Okay? But instead, it's called Comet C2012S1. It tells me, Jim McCanney, it tells me two things. Number one, that comet was discovered long ago, and these two guys were just named as somebody there, possibly in administrative positions or whatever, where but they didn't get their names on it because, gee, they didn't really discover it. It was discovered long ago. And somebody had to pop it, so they actually named it C2012S1. This is very interesting. It's like one of those really subtle keys that tells you that they were watching this baby long before. Now, thank you, and this comes from, I won't mention any names, but I believe he's from the UK. Listener I know has been around for a long time. But then the email goes on to say, one comet Elenin was found in December 2010 and was named after the finder. Here's another example, 2P2011R3PN Novochonok and Gerke, named after the finders again. And this is the same guy, Novochonok, who discovered that, and he got his name on this comet, P 2012 R3. That's interesting. This is so interesting. And it says there was another new minor planet find that was also given the name Novochonik. So he got his name on a number of things recently, not to mention the 2011 comet that was named after him. So the question is, why did they not put the name designation of these discoverers, these so-called discoverers, on comet C2012S1? And why did they call it ISON after the institution or observatory name? That is very, very subtle, very interesting, and thank you for sending this in. And like I say, and then I like the P.S. at the end. It says, been very windy over here the last 3 to 4 days. Nothing at all, then big gusts. And so once again, nothing at all but big gusts of wind. So there's a comment he makes here about these winds are really blowing. And I've gotten this wind information from many, many people. So let me take a minute here. And as I promised, I'm going to talk about the blowing winds here. What causes those? How do you identify blowing winds on Earth with a comet that's out by the orbit of Jupiter? And how do you predict this? Which I predicted, by the way. And remember that I talked about the other Earth changes that were going on. The Tokyo Blizzard, the 10, just unbelievable report of the 10 volcanoes going off the Kamchatka Peninsula up in Russia, the low-level electron auroras, that low-latitude electron aurora is something extremely unusual, the radio burst from Jupiter announced last week, and the winds all over. And I had a guy named James Jancic. I talked to him this week, a talk show host from Chicago who had been on his show many times. He's got his show up and running again. He said, Jim, I can't believe I'm living witness to your predictions about the winds. And he's does a bit of driving on the road, so he witnesses many parts of the country, and he's seeing this all over. But he says it just blows like crazy for a while, and then all of a sudden it stops, and it's dead calm. And then all of a sudden the wind starts ripping from the other direction. He goes, what's going on? And I've had other people say, could you please explain what's going on here? Why does this happen? Okay, so what's going on? The comet, literally the Earth is connecting into a comet-like structure. Much more comet activity around Earth than we normally have. And this is what's going on. We are connecting electrically to a comet that's way out by Jupiter. But this gives us a cross solar system electrical current, a lot more electrical current activity, even though the sun is at, like I say, a dearth, absolute zero, low level. The solar wind is not doing anything. And so that's why the Weather Service is remiss to saying anything, because first of all, they don't know what's causing these winds. They're not seeing them on their radar, and so they're not reporting them. And this was so comical last week. I reported that finally the National Weather Service said, well, we're going to have about 3 months of wind here. They never said why. There's no historical precedent for saying that. There's no reason. They don't give a reason why it's supposed to be windy for the next 3 months, but they got to say something. But anyway, here's what happens physically. Okay. The Earth is, and by the way, I've got some pictures of these in my weather book. I actually show how this happens. So if you have a copy of the weather book, look at the diagrams. I've got a hand-drawn diagram, and it looks like comet tails or kind of serpent-type tails that connect up to Earth's upper atmosphere and then extend out into outer space. These are literally electrical connections that attach like a leech or an eel to the Earth's upper atmosphere electrically. Okay, they tunnel down through and cause electrical currents to go all the way down to the surface of the Earth. The winds form wind patterns. It ionizes the air down at the surface of the Earth, and when they go up the tube, they start rotating, and that rotation is what causes the wind. So they're whirlwinds, but they're on a large scale. They might be 2 to 5 miles across. Okay? And these are moving across, and you can't see them. You might see the wind or the dust whipping up in a particular area, but you can't really see these like a concentrated tornado, but that's what they are. They're kind of like invisible, big 5 to 10 mile across tornadoes. And so you're driving down the road or you're in your house, and all of a sudden the papers are blown off your desk and you're trying to shut the door and you're, holy cow, the trees are bending sideways. And, okay, how is this related to the comet that's out by Jupiter? Well, we are connecting electrically into that comet. That comet is attached to us all the way out to Jupiter. And so, okay, then we have, that causes an electrical charging in the region near Earth. The upper atmosphere is the body of charge. That's where the bulk of that charge is stored. The ions are attracted into that negative charging that's sitting up there on the ionosphere that we can't measure. We really can't tell it's there. But forming those comet tails that come down and attach to the upper atmosphere, we are acting as a comet. So when those electrical currents come in, they connect all the way down to the surface of the Earth, through the atmosphere, through the cloud system, all the way down to the surface of the Earth, many times in a clear blue sky. You can have a clear blue sky, and all of a sudden it just starts blowing like crazy, and you go, what the heck? You know, you're trying to tie things down. You have trees falling over. You have 70-mile-an-hour what appear to be straight line winds, and then, oh, maybe it goes on for 15, 20 minutes, a half hour, an hour, it's hard to say, or 5 minutes. And all of a sudden it stops. And you go, what the heck's going on here? The wind, you know, okay, so I'm back to normal, okay, no big deal. And, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour later, whew, here comes the wind from the other direction. What the heck's going on here? How do you relate that to the comet out by Jupiter? Well, if you're in the National Weather Service, you don't. You don't know. You don't know anything about it. It's not in your computer models, and so you can't say it. You just have to wear your skinny little tie and be in the National Weather Service. That's about all you can do, because they don't have a clue what's going on. Okay, so let me talk a little bit about some other planetary activity that's coming on here with another comet. This comet Lemon, on April 29th, is going to have a perfect electrical alignment with the planet Mercury. And so what does that mean? Okay, the comet at that point is going to be around the orbit of Venus. So that's quite a ways away, but once again, by the time Comet Lemon gets into that position, after it's already crossed its perihelion, its closest position to the Sun, and it should be very active at that point. It should be very much excited. Then it's coming across, up to the ecliptic, and remember, the ecliptic plane is where comets will pop into excitement. They will get much more excited than normal. And all of a sudden, at the same time, little Mercury comes zipping around, gives it a perfect electrical alignment to the Sun, and that will be in the early morning sky. I'll be reporting more about where to look for that. But at that point, Comet Lemon will be naked eye visible. You don't need binoculars. You just go out in the morning. I'll be talking about exactly where to look for that. But that's April 29th. Put it on your calendar. And by the way, I did do some analysis. There will not be, with Comet Lemon, there will not be any ashen light of Venus activity where it's close or exciting Venus. But remember, I did report where Mercury and Venus have a very interesting alignment that's coming up that should give us some ashen light of Venus activity. And I'll be reporting more on that, the exact time and place to look for that, And that's a difficult one. You need some specialized equipment, but I know a lot of my listeners have good equipment out there. And by the way, I got to make a note here to have people looking out there for the comet Lemon, do some spectroscopy. In fact, I know just the people that will be doing that. They have good telescope equipment. They're excellent amateurs. And pull down the spectroscopic, do a spectroscopic analysis, the line analysis of the luminosity of Comet Lemon, which will prove that it's not reflected light. Okay, just a quick note here in update. As most of you know, or hopefully most of you know, the five books dealing with the electrical nature of the solar system are in ebook format up on the webpage. There are a couple of them that are in Spanish available, and the weather book and the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book have yet to be translated into Spanish. That's in the process, and those are horrendous tasks. So I'm trying to move that. I figured Spanish would be a good second language. Most, let's put it this way, French, Italian, German, and the Nordic, the other Northern European languages, most of them read English. And so English covers a lot of that area, but Spanish is an area where a lot of the Latin Americans, a lot of the Spanish-speaking people worldwide, they're not well versed in English. So a technical book, the best way to deal with that is to translate it into Spanish. So there's been a big effort to translate that. The Diamond Principle is in Spanish, available in ebook format. And by the way, these will continue to be available in hardcover or hardbound. Actually, it's perfect bound is the correct term. It's a softer cover, it's not a hardcover. Hard copy, I guess, is the proper word. These books will all be available into the future in hard copy, but they're a lot more expensive in hard copy. The e-books, right now, you can get the 5 e-book set. That's the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, the Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection, the weather book. I call it the weather book. The real name is Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather. And all of these are written for the general public. And the 5th book, the Diamond Principle, all available in e-book format. The Calculate Primes book, many reasons for not putting it in the e-format. First of all, the technical nature of it. But the biggest reason is the DVD. And also, it's the Calculate Primes will not be translated into Spanish. It's for the same reason. Very technical. I had to create a lot of the terminology because it's all new. So the Calculate Primes book, only available in English in hard copy. Then plus all of my CDs and DVDs will be only available in the hard copy by ordering a mail order on the internet, not by mail order. There's no more mail order, by the way, unfortunately, only internet ordering at this time. And that'll continue into the future. But the 5 book set, all of the books dealing with the electrical nature of the universe, all available now in ebook format, and you can get all 5 books for just $60. So visit the webpage jmccsci.com. And a lot of people who already have the book in hard copy are buying them in e-format. Just the weather book is $35, so if you add a little bit more for $60, you get the whole 5 book set. And so it's really, and by the way, the weather book is really beautiful with the color plates. When in the printed version, just to keep costs down, we had to do all the plates in black and white. But the e-book has color plates, and it makes it really effective and a very, very colorful book, let's put it that way. And lots of drawings, a lot of data. Going back and being part of this ebook process has been quite an eye-opener, because I got to really jump back and look at my books again. And I'll tell you, these are solid books, a lot of really amazing good information, and just as valid today as when I wrote them, some of them over 10 years ago, the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book. The weather book came out in 2004, predated anything that the standard science community was looking at. The best thing they've ever done, or the best thing they ever could do, is try and copy bits and pieces of it and try and incorporate it into their own, that's what I call the creeping crud. The books are, like I say, an e-format. And there's a new book coming out. So, and with the comet stuff going on this year, that's coming up, the comet Lemon, the Ashen Light of Venus, the comet C2012S1, which is already affecting us in the inner solar system. Just get the books and get informed, because you're not going to find this information anyplace else, I guarantee you. So, okay. Remember the website, jmccsci.com, 7 letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, .com. So go there, and by the way, I have a picture of Comet Lemon on the front page of my webpage. Go there and see it. See for yourself a bright, luminescent comet. And it's really, when this thing becomes luminescent, I was just in an earthquake. The building I am in right now just shook. A minor earthquake, I must say. But I might have to cut this show a little early here, because that could be the precursor of another tremor. So I am going to end this show for tonight, and okay, we will see you next week. I just was in a earthquake, and I will talk to you next week. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.